man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, everyone. How are you doing? And welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? In the booth with me, as always, film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Well, you know, Iffy, I just watched on Hulu this amazing documentary called When the Screaming Stops. It's not a horror movie. It sounds like one, but I mean, it kind of is, I guess. Do you guys remember the late 80s British boy band Bross? It's okay if you don't. They did not make a ripple in the United States, but they were huge in the UK and Europe and like Japan and Australia. Two brothers and like a guy, and they were like, you know, they had a bunch of hits until they didn't. And this movie kind of catches up with these twins who have not. They're not particularly close right now. One lives in L.A. He's a character actor you've probably seen in like Guillermo del Toro movies. The other one has been performing in Vegas for years to people who have no idea that he had this past in this band. And they're getting back together to do like this reunion show at O2 in London. And of course, drama, drama, drama. They need the therapist from that Metallica documentary to come in. They don't, unfortunately, but these guys get under each other's skins like nobody can. Like, as Dave put it, some twins finish each other's sentences. These twins don't let each other finish a sentence. So even if you don't know the band, it's a really compelling film. It's like an episode of VH1's Bands Reunited writ large, but it's just a sort of interesting look about like being super on top and then like having it all go away and then going off and doing your own thing and then trying to make that happen again. So When the Screaming Stops, it's on Hulu. Check it out.
That's amazing. And I'm picturing Take That meets Nelson.
Ish. You're not.
If he doesn't know either of the groups
too,
I'm talking about.
You're not
just
going to
keep nodding my head.
I'm going to send you some sweet Nelson tracks.
And that beautiful voice you hear is producer and film festivals programmer, Treya Clark. What's good?
What's good with me is, you guys may not know this, but for 9 years, I produced a gaming festival called Indiecade. And I'm not doing it this year, but it takes place this weekend in Los Angeles. And I highly recommend people check it out. It is a full conference of sort of independent game developers. And the similarities between game developing on an independent scale and indie filmmaking are so enormous. And I wouldn't know anything about this world if I hadn't ended up strangely in the pocket and producing it. And the games are phenomenal. You can go play all of them, meet the developers. It's like meeting filmmakers who are going to grow and do the next Mortal Kombat or other game that Iffy plays. And it's very cool. And they also have, in addition, like obviously they set up huge spaces where you can sort of wander console to console, but also they have big games of being outside that are sort of interactive. They have a lot of VR and AR stuff. So it's very cool. Indiecade. Check it out. Go to some panels and play some stuff.
If he's going to start a Twitch channel where you can watch him develop a game in real time.
Oh, man, yeah.
That's part of, they do game jams throughout the festival.
I'm well aware of Indiecade. I did stuff like 3-4 years ago.
I was running
it then. When I was with Geek and Sundry, we were on the floor at E3 with them hosting it. Yeah. I was there. That was me.
With
I was
Ash one Minnick. Of the hosts. That's my right hand.
Oh, yeah. I'm friends with Ash. See, there it is. That's the connection.
Welcome to the small world of Who Shot Ya.
I love Indiecade. Check it out, please.
Iffy, what's good?
Oh, what's good with me is, I did this bit already, but you know what? I'm going to do it again. And Casey, you can go ahead and feel free to go ahead and add it in post. You know, here's me, add more work for Casey. But you know, a lot of people, you know, have been talking because a new Destiny 2 expansion has come out.
Yes,
and
it's all
everyone
can't stop asking me, you know, am I going to play it? Am I going? And you know, this is all I have to say to them.
People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, I'm thinking I'm back.
Yeah, I'm back on Destiny 2. Shadowkeep is great. The world's good. Eris Morn, the three-eyed bae, she's back in the mix on the moon. We're fighting. We're killing the hive. And we're here to come save the moon. You know, she got juicy eyes, and I'm here for it. So I'm super excited. You know, soon, you know, I think we're going to have to get Alonzo and Drea playing. I think, you know, Drea,
I'm in.
You'd make a good warlock. Alonzo, you could be the hunter.
That is the sweetest thing.
Yeah, we could do strikes all the time. But that's what I've been up to. I'm deep in it. I'm back in the mix.
I'm loving the cultural acknowledgement that what we play now is the John Wick of people keep asking me if I'm back, rather than the Michael Corleone. Don Corleone?
Michael.
I think I'm getting out, and then they pull me back in.
No.
That's where we are now.
Yeah. Now it's time to reference Wick. Oh, man, on today's show, we're going to be talking about the most talked about film on Nerd Meets Film Twitter, Joker, and we're going to have lots of thoughts about it, I'm sure, because I can't wait to start running my mouth. And then we're going to introduce a new game called Name That Goon. And, of course, we'll have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment titled It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And first up, this past week in an interview with Empire, director Martin Scorsese was asked about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and he had this to say. I don't see them. I tried, you know, but that's not cinema. Honestly, the closest I can think of them as well-made as they are, with actors doing the best they can under the circumstances, is theme parks. It isn't the cinema of human beings trying to convey emotional, psychological experience to another human being. And his remarks were infuriating to nerds everywhere and saddened Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn. Is this important? Do you care? And I'm going to say, nope. You know, like, because that's the number one thing. And as an artist, I think the number one thing that I am not looking forward to is that's when you're washed. The moment you start dissing, like, the new popular thing is, like, when you're washed, you're like, oh, I don't get this, so it's not good because this is that. Because it had all the things that he listed it doesn't. And I know that for a fact because he even admitted he didn't finish watching it. So, and I think, you know, it happens from time to time. Just people decide it's not for them. And then instead of just being like, oh, it's not for me, I'm going with my life, it's like, it's not for me and it's bad. And I think that's the one step you want to avoid.
Oh, look, I don't think that you're going to get very far trying to tar Martin Scorsese as an elitist.
Yeah.
Like, this is a guy whose taste in movies, I think, runs very wide. Like, that somebody put those clips out on Twitter just editing together, like, him saying the names of titles. And they were Westerns, and they were B-pictures, and they were musicals, and they were also, like, you know, arty things, and all kinds of stuff. And on the one hand, look, I enjoy the Marvel movies. I have a good time watching them. But very often, even in this room, when we talk about them like television. We talk about them like these sort of serialized entertainments, and they exist in a form in a lot of ways that has a very sort of TV feel to it. You know, in the way that the beats are, in the way that the arcs of the stories progress, that kind of thing. And so, if it's not his cinema, then that's fine. I think that it's hard to nail down any one definition of what cinema is, but I'm sure by the way he defines it, it isn't. And so he says that, and that's cool. But, you know, and also, frankly, I don't know, the theme parks is even a diss now when you look at, like, these interactive worlds, like the whole, that all the Star Wars stuff that Disneyland and the other parks have now, the Hogwarts things they've got at the Universal parks, where it's thoroughly immersive and it's all, you know, you're in world and all that stuff. So he's not wrong, but, you know.
I think he's wrong. I do. I think cinema is evolving, and I think that, I mean, I don't care that he's wrong because he's an old man who's proving his oldness, and he does have a very rich wealth of knowledge of film. Like, but I don't understand how someone who can be as enamored with, like, Powell and Pressburger films that are, like, operatic weirdness factories about cursed ballerinas can't apply the same expansion of mind and whatever to something that's set in a fantasy world. Did he make the same proclamations about Star Wars? I think, anyway, I think it's dismissive. And because he is sort of one of the forefathers of cinema, and it's people take him sort of seriously with diminishing returns. Like, I take him less seriously all the time. So yeah, it's sort of important to me, but also I am as easy to dismiss Martin Scorsese's concept of what constitutes cinema as he is the Marvel films.
So speaking of auteurs with ideas, Ang Lee's newest film, Gemini Man, may look a little different than other films if you see it in one of the the small handful of theaters actually showing it in the way he intends it to look. It was shot at a higher frame rate of 120 frames per second, whereas most films are shot at 24 frames per second. This higher frame rate creates a crisper look, but the appearance of the movie does not look the way films traditionally do. In a recent interview with The Guardian, Ang Lee went so far as to say that audiences have been brainwashed into thinking that the conventional 24 frames per second was the only way movies could be viewed. Is this important? Do you care? I'm going to do like Iffy, and I'm going to answer my own questions.
Yes. Do it.
There is certainly a future for 120 frames per second, and I'm sure there will be generations that are raised on 120 frames per second, and that's what movies will look like to them. We are not there yet. Right now, it makes everything look like a 1970s British television
you're
show.
You're the only person I know who saw The Long Walk of Billy.
Yeah, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. I saw it in 120 at the Dome during the 1 week they showed it that way in Los Angeles. 1 week in New York, 1 week in L.A., and then never again. And it was a shit show. I'm sorry. Like, the whole movie looked like the behind-the-scenes roll on a DVD. Like, it just looked like somebody's phone camera. Everything was so crisp and so delineated, and it just it sucked the drama out of it. It made the background look like people who had accidentally wandered onto the set. So it's like, I think there is a way to do something with that. And frankly, in Billy Lynn, because it's about a guy dealing with PTSD and flashbacks, if they had made like either the present day or the flashbacks alone 120 frames, that would have popped, and that would have meant something, and that would have shown you, given you some insight into how the character views the world. But if everything is 120 frames per second and everything looks flat and overlit and crispy, then it's pointless.
Do you guys think James Cameron is real pissed that Ang Lee got to corner on this techno himself?
I think that James Cameron watched Billy Lynn and was like, nope, we're not doing this.
But normally, like, he's the guy who's like, no, that's my thing. Yeah, I get obsessed with a very specific kind of innovative whatever nonsense.
Yeah, I think I feel exactly what you were saying, Alonzo. I don't think I've yet to see any in 120 because, usually they're not shown. And I'm not going to go out my way to go for this one that everyone tells me is not that great.
I'm gonna try to endure this in the 120 just so I can continue this conversation of stop it, Ang Lee.
But there is something where, like, to hearing him get so mad about it, it does kind of make me feel that this is going to be something used in the way that, like you describe, where it's used to make a scene pop and everyone's going to applaud it, and Ang is going to be so mad. He's like, you didn't like when I did it.
The thing is, these have all been written interviews, to the best of my knowledge, so this guy could also casually be like just talking about things and it just sounds all vehement. Brainwashed is an interesting term because he's correct in the sense that our eyes are learned how to see cinema, Martin Scorsese cinema, and we see it a particular way. It's why that motion smoothing thing is such an issue.
Sure.
It's hard for the eye. And so him using that term is the one that people have really jumped on, and he's like, this is like my fifth language. I'm just pointing out things are evolving.
I mean, it's true. We are conditioned to look at things a certain way, and you know, like, I remember the first time, it took me about a year to get used to HD television.
Yeah,
just because, like, just like seeing like the edge of people's makeup on certain shows, and just, it was like, so much detail. But that's why I'm saying, I think eventually, yes, this will become the standard, and people will have grown up watching it, and that will be their idea of what cinema looks like, and everything else is going to look like when we look at, you know, daguerreotypes or whatever, you know. But right now, for us, this is just freaky looking. It looks like we're watching Upstairs Downstairs, you know, or like a really crappy old Doctor Who episode.
There's no such thing. They're all good. All right. Speaking of daguerreotypes, Julie Delpy. You guys, segues are my thing. Julie Delpy wouldn't do the final Before film. These are the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight, until she received equal pay as Ethan Hawke. If you've seen any of them, you understand that they're both just the two of them talking, and they're also credited as co-writers in at least the last couple, if not the first one as well.
I think maybe in all three, but definitely in two and three for sure.
Okay. Well, she was recently interviewed for Variety, was asked about gender equality, and she had this to say.
As a woman, you know you're paid less than a man as a writer, as a director, as an actress. On the Before movies, the first film, I think I was paid maybe a tenth of what Ethan was paid. The second movie, I think I was paid half. And the third movie, I said, listen, guys, if I'm not paid the same, I'm not doing it.
As a woman, I want to say, is this important? Do you care? And I'm going to answer first, too, because that's what we're doing today. That Richard Linklater nodded to the idea of, with the initial film, obviously, not only was Julie an unknown entity, but a foreign unknown entity. She had no sort of traction in the market here. Ethan was a very big star in his age range, was getting a ton of offers at that point. And so, of course, it would evolve. Is that our theme today? It would evolve from there. So I will say that it's important to me that she has always been forthright about this, because I think not talking about pay in any industry is a problem
all
around.
It's a tool of the masters.
It really is. And people are wary of it. And so I'm always appreciative when someone like Julie Delpy is going to come out and say that. I do think that there's a lot to learn. Like, if you have any interest in the sort of inside baseball, I'm like, oh, she should have argued for a first most favored nations by her second film, and then but I'm glad that she spoke out. And it is one of those things, if you're not thinking about that, you might just assume, even if you don't know anything about it, oh, these two actors are sharing equal amounts of screen time, they're probably getting paid the same. And having that light shone on it is important, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very important to me, you know, obviously, as an actor. And lots of times, lots of times when these conversations about, you know, I mean, if they're doing, you know, white women like this, imagine how they're doing us. You know, just simple. But also, like, I am always of the strong belief that, like, we got to get, like, equal pay by the sequel. Is it good enough to get a sequel?
Yeah.
Bet. Like
equal by the sequel.
Yeah. Ooh, let's make that a shirt.
Oh my God, that's a hashtag movement right there.
Because that makes sense. You know, like, especially since it's just the two of them. Like, what? Come on. Like, but it's all a game. Like, especially when it comes to money, it's like, because to everyone else, it's like, duh, why not? But like, to the people up top, they're like, we must save every penny, and if we can have to screw over our lead actress, I'm sorry.
Can't we just replace her with Marion Cotillard?
Yeah. but yeah, so yeah, I'm definitely very important.
This is important, and yeah, you're right. There was something I was reading about how like etiquette is often a tool of the oppressor. And so the idea that it is, because there's this notion that it's in bad taste to talk about what you earn, is actually been a thing to sort of keep lower level employees from having the real conversations and demanding equity with their bosses.
Oh, yeah. That is 100% true. And it's 100% time for y'all to hear about the other shows on Maximum Fun. So we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be
talking
about
the segue.
I will never learn that.
But when we come back, we'll be talking about the Joker just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic. Because
it's the words for biography and picture.
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I am the host of the rebooted podcast formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duralde.
And today we're talking about Joker. Drea, can you hook us up and drop us a quick synopsis of the film?
I can, Ify. I appreciate you asking me in such a favorable way. So in Joker, we're introduced to a very troubled man named Arthur Fleck. When we meet him, he is working as a clown, and he is heavily medicated. He has a lot of health and mental issues, largely revolving around a tendency to laugh when he's uncomfortable. He is enamored with a woman who lives in his building. He lives with his mother and takes care of her. And in sort of quick succession, a lot of bad things happen to him. He loses his job. He loses his access to medication and mental health support. And his dreams of becoming a stand-up comedian are thwarted when he's mocked by his hero. And how he handles all of those things is in a very, one could say, violent way, because this is secretly about a villain in the DC Comics universe. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Yeah.
It's a secret until you hear the title.
Yeah.
He's Joker. Did you get that?
Yeah.
From Batman.
Yeah, that's, whoo, man. Oh, man. There are two different, hats to, say things about this movie. Because, and I'm going to try and keep it short and sweet, and from a nerd perspective, this is not a comic book movie. The whole Joker's whole thing is that there is no story. He is chaotic. He has no motivation. And the thing about this movie is his motivation is something you can get behind. It gives the Killmonger treatment almost in a way to Joker, except when you really watch how he handles it, it comes from a side where you're like, no, that's just wildly out of control. So that's, and then the anachronous stuff of literally, if this Joker is fighting our Batman, then Joker should be about 50. That whole thing, because Bruce Wayne in this is about 8. Bruce Wayne is typically portrayed as in his 30s.
Well, but the Gotham TV show kind of did the same thing.
Oh yeah, no, I don't get me on that rant.
Wait, I'm just saying, you had tween Bruce, but Edward Nygma and Oswald Cobblepot were clearly a good 10, 15 years older than him.
Yeah, I'm not beholden to the age range of things, because I think people play with those more. I mean, they played with them in Judy with Lorna Luft's age. Why not play with this?
Right.
But for me, what you're talking about in the sense of, I didn't get a sense that this was a superhero, supervillain movie at all. And it's funny because it seems to go out of its way to couch itself in early 1980s New York, a very recognizable, run-down, garbage-strewn New York, to the point that I felt they kept having to use the word Gotham to remind us, oh, no, this is a fictional place, even though so much of this is based in this reality. And that's where I actually... It's because it is a DC property, because it is part of this, it's gotten a lot more attention and a lot more whatever. But to me, I was like, no, it's kind of a standard drama thriller.
Oh, yes.
I know you think that Martin Scorsese is a talentless old hack and all, but...
Listen, he made a few good films. I'll give him that.
And two of them are...
One of them was recreated in its...
Two of them didn't exist, there would be no Joker.
Yeah.
Because you're right, if that's a point I tried to make in my review that people went out of their way to misunderstand. I said, if you take the Joker out of it, they thought I meant the character. I'm like, no, if you take the myth, the 80-year history we have of all the different versions and manifestations of that character. If this were strictly a movie about Arthur Fleck, failed clown, it's a shitty Scorsese ripoff, and people have been making them for years. I remember at Sundance years ago sitting through some awful movie called God's Angry Man. It was one of those Sundance movies you never see again, because it was a blatant Taxi Driver ripoff. And this is Taxi Driver, which then becomes the King of Comedy.
The difficulty for me, because I never said he was talentless. I did say he was old.
I'm teasing.
You shut your mouth, Martin Scorsese, old man. Just kidding, just kidding.
I'll be friends with you.
If you watch Taxi Driver, there's a point of view, and we know all along that Martin Scorsese's view of Travis Bickle is locked in, that he's not a good guy, that all of the things that are happening to him, he has some bad stuff happen to him as well, but it's never a twisty, oh, is he playing with our sympathies? He's just showing that he's a complex human who's a bad guy. Todd Phillips doesn't have that. There's beautiful craftsmanship with this film. It's to me, like, honestly, if it was a music video, like, it's so lovingly shot. Like, grotesque look of Joaquin Phoenix's emaciated form and face and disgusting clothes. Like, it is so beautifully handled. The score is impeccable. There's not touching all of that. He surrounded himself with really talented people. But I don't think Todd Phillips has a grasp of the causality of the things that he was throwing in there. Like, I felt like he was getting buzzwords of all of these topical issues of today, of the resistance movement, of people being fed up with the rich, of all the, put him in, shook him up, but he doesn't have the nuance to understand them himself. So why would Arthur Fleck or his world know?
So that's kind of where I was, where in the sense, but mine is like, actually, I think that's where the like static comes in, because I think, you know, there is an obvious Arthur Fleck is bad. I did feel the problem, I think, with that is a lot of his motivations are grounded in things that are
genuine.
That's
more what I mean. Yeah.
And it's like Arthur Fleck is a bad, but yeah, no, we should eat the rich. No,
but the people revolting against the rich are also terrible.
Yeah, like
exactly.
And I think we're invited to feel sorry for Arthur Fleck in a way that we never are with Travis Bickle.
I agree. I see that. I haven't seen Taxi Driver or King of Comedy. And that might be
the
reason
see it.
Why.
It's going to change your thoughts on Joker.
Well, it probably will, because like my thing was the almost complete opposite of Lanza's, whereas if you remove the comic book aspect, this is like an interesting movie about someone who's losing his grip and wants to be a comedian. And you know, I think even a better someone with a better grasp of things could marry Taxi Driver and King of Comedy in a way that would not feel like
did
such
it
a
get
ripple.
Your industry right? How's the comedy?
Oh, you know, I want to bitch about that so much. So first off and foremost,
are we about to go on a stand-up comedy tangent?
No,
no, I want to hear this.
So one thing, I think we can't continue to talk about this without talking about Todd Phillips' comment. And there's nothing that's so annoying to me of when a non-comedian talks about how they can't do comedy, because it's like, oh, then you're not sitting in the clubs, and it's very obvious, because people are saying some wild stuff in clubs, and funnier, smarter people are saying some stuff that are really, really walking that line, but they're sticking the landing. And like you mentioned in a tweet, Jojo Rabbit is coming out about literally could be painted in a way as sympathizing Nazis, but it's not. So that is just bullshit.
To counter that, I actually had an enormous swell of Shakespeare come to me, because literally all I kept thinking of was, from Macbeth, a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And my other problem with this film is, with the deep cynicism of it, I didn't think that there was a point to Joker by the end. And part of that is tied in, weirdly, in the Faulkner of it, to the unreliable narration.
Yeah.
Like, I love, you both have talked about how historically the Joker has had this kind of chaos background. And one of the things is you don't know his origin. And how that's kind of handled in this film is there are a few reveals of this unreliable narrator. And I think it's the kind of thing it's like I was watching people respond to that and be like, oh, that is so cool. And all I could think was, have you not seen a movie before?
Well, I know.
Have you guys gone, girl?
I was so annoyed by the fact that, like, there's this cool reveal that happens. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Didn't see that coming. And then the movie has to stop and walk you through every moment of it in case you missed it.
Wait,
it's like explaining a magic trick.
No.
Like,
the theater I saw it with was also people. This is how I knew what I was in for in terms of vibe. That the film, I saw it in 35, and so there were only two trailers beforehand, because obviously they don't have a lot of those. Mm. One of them, the first one, of course, was for the new Christopher Nolan. I swear to God, I heard a wave of boners behind me. Like, the Christopher Nolan, like, oh, like literally it's a teaser trailer. There's two shots of the actor. They honestly applauded for 5 minutes from that and then didn't peep during, at not like it was cricket quiet during the second trailer, which was the Harley Quinn film. Oh. And I was just like, bah, fuck all of you. But the same people, there were the cheering for it. And that's why me trying to come to terms with who are the people that are responding to this and why, because I like to know those things. And I saw this film with one of my best friends. It was her second time seeing it because she loved it. And one of the things she related to and was trying to explain to me afterwards, because I was a little dumbfounded, was she's someone who suffered with depression, with heavy mental illness. And she was talking about there are little speeches and things that he says about not being seen and being left behind in the world and whatever that spoke to her. And I have to imagine, is it that are a lot of the, is the bro heavy audience that's responding to this, are they not getting that message elsewhere?
I think this is part of the whole, my big problem with this movie is the whole having its cake and eating it too. You know,
sure.
the muddled politics were on the one hand, the rich are terrible, and on the other hand, like Occupy or anybody who fights back against the rich is also terrible.
Yeah.
This movie, on the one hand, wants to demonstrate compassion for people with mental illness and why there needs to be better services and that people need to be nicer to them and more understanding. And at the same time, it trots out the same old tropes of like crazy bad guy, you know, and equates neurological conditions with mental illnesses and just and generally exploits them in a tacky way. So it's like, yeah, those nuggets are in there. And the thing where he says like the problem with mental illness is having to pretend you don't have one or whatever. Like there are these moments in there where you can pull them out and go like, no, this is actually insightful. This is actually, you know, a sincere statement of something. But then in the overall soup of this movie, it gets lost in just another freak show.
I do want to just take a quick second to mention this because we didn't get a chance to get around to it. But I watched it and I didn't feel it was dangerous. I feel like I was looking for the insult. I mean, there was a light moment where it did seem like his life got better when he murdered someone, but for the most part I think it's no more or less violent than any other like film of this type, and I feel like Rambo is more dangerous than Joker.
I didn't think the danger was in the violence. I think it's the ideology of it.
Yeah.
For me, my danger was more hearing the responses of people in my audience being like, so cool, after moments when I was like, that was definitely not cool. So people who aren't analyzing, the lack of critical thinking, which is, you know, ruining most of our lives, is also applicable here.
I've never signed on to when people try to blame like rap music or video games for whatever social ails are happening. So I'm not going to pile on with this movie. I understand why like people in, you know, the theater where the guy dressed as the Joker shot up a theater full of people watching The Dark Knight Rises maybe did not want to screen this film.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. But beyond that, no. I think, if anything, you're right. I think Rambo is more dangerous because it's at least more clear about what it means and what its intent is.
Yeah.
This movie is such a mishmash that it's just like, yeah, you can take the worst out of it. You could take some good stuff out of it, or you could just take nothing because ultimately it's all contradictory.
Yeah. Which there is one thing I want to discuss, but it's going to be off the pod because it is it's the final moments of the film that I really have so many thoughts on, which are the reason that is a glimmer of hope for me. But have there been any other dangerous movies y'all have seen, or what do you feel makes a movie dangerous?
Triumph of the Will.
Exactly. Yeah, like blatant propaganda. I was just looking. I did not answer this week's question because I put it off, and sorry about that. But the IndieWire critics survey, they asked, you know, like, is this a dangerous movie? Are there dangerous movies? And there were some interesting suggestions, like, you know, Dinesh D'Souza documentaries or that faith-based movie Unplanned that's all about how, like, you know, Planned Parenthood is going to force you to get an abortion, you know.
That's based on a false fake story.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, Birth of a Nation, the first one. You know, I think, like, you know.
Reefer Madness.
I think it might have been dangerous if anyone had taken it seriously. You know, but I think there are films that, like, I'm not going to say Cruising, but there are people who would have put that in that category. But you know, movies that portray in a false way, you know, members of minority groups as being as being themselves dangerous or being a problem, you know. I would qualify that as dangerous, but no, I don't think this movie is ideologically sound enough to be dangerous.
I think Gone with the Wind is dangerous because it is both racist and boring.
Pretty Woman is dangerous because no woman but Julia Roberts looks good in brown with polka dots.
Or would make the money that she makes for the night. Reach, Bev, Will. It's Pretty Woman for you.
Nice.
But like all in all, I think there's enough stuff to glean that I don't hate it. I don't quite know if I like it yet. But hearing your reviews might help me out. So Drea, what would you rate this film?
I would rate it stream it. I think that there's things in here that are interesting. I think I trust most viewers to be able to discern more knowingly than Todd Phillips did in terms of the right and wrong and the preposterousness of it. I also would encourage you, many people will be wanting to watch this in tandem with Taxi Driver or King of Comedy, and I would say watch it with Black Swan because they are very similar films, and if you're interested in emaciated artists who have like conjured up a false reality for themselves where that includes them dancing about and being the center of attention, That's a better one for me. That's a fun. It's a more fun comparison.
Needed more Party Man. I'm somewhere between stream and skip. Like there are things within it that I think are well done. There are craft elements. There are a few ideas, but I have to admit, I feel like part of me would be happier if I'd never seen this movie. So it's hard to say. I mean, if you feel like you have to have the conversation about it with people because everyone's talking about this film, then, you know, I guess you'll have to see it. But I'm sick of the conversation, too. So,
you got to have it in person and not on Twitter where some DC fan's going to end up in your mentions.
YouTube comments. That's where the really deep conversations are happening.
A lot of people aren't online as much as we are.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
Well played.
Good for them, right?
Yeah. I'm somewhere, actually, between screen it and stream it. I feel like as much as it... Like, it's a shakeup for me. It wasn't for Alonzo. I think there are people who I know that would love this movie, who is going to have a good time. And it's also going to be uncultured fucks like me who haven't even seen Taxi Driver or The King of Comedy, which I will watch before we record next, and I will have thoughts. But we're done with that.
Okay.
We've said our reviews. So we'll be right back after we hear from another show for maximum fun.
Hi, I am Lori Kilmartin.
And I'm Jackie Cashin.
Together, we host a podcast called...
The Jackie and Lori Show.
We're both stand-up comics. We recently met each other because women weren't allowed to work together on the road or in gigs for a long, long time. And so our friendship has been unfolding on this podcast for a couple years. Jackie constantly works the road. I write for Conan, and then I work the road in between.
We do a lot of stand-up comedy, and so we celebrate stand-up, and we also bitch about it.
We keep it to an hour. We don't have any guests. We somehow find enough to talk about every single week. So find us. You can subscribe to The Jackie and Lori Show at Maximum Fun. .org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, bye.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Whiteway, and in the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Drea Clark.
And today we're going to play everyone's favorite game, Name That Goon. Producer Casey will play a clip of a Batman movie villain, and we'll have to guess the character and the actor. And the villains can come from any movie which features Batman. So there's going to be three opportunities for points, naming the villain, naming the movie, and then naming the actor, which means I will always have a chance at 2 points. if someone guesses incorrectly, then the other contestants, us, will have a chance to steal. And first one to yell it out snags it. The contestant to get the most correct answers will win a nice, firm hug from me.
Woohoo! What have you win?
Like you're not giving them away.
Yeah, I'm a... I know. When you get one wrong, you'll hear this sound. And when you get it right, you'll hear this sound. which is from Prince's song Bat Dance, arguably his most famous song.
I could argue that.
One of his biggest hits. I bet he got a lot of checks for it.
Oh, let's definitely. Put it that way. It's probably number one on when you go to his Spotify page, you know, people, you know, when Dove's Claw. No, it's Bat Dance.
Bat Dance.
Yeah. Let's begin then. Drea, guess what? You're up first.
Yes.
Casey, play the clip.
Now you know what you're buying. Let me tell you the price. First, I want out of here. Second, I want full custody of my daughter. All right? And her mom can have, like, supervised visits. But her stank-ass boyfriend can't come. Donnell can't come.
Yeah, I don't know this one.
Oh, Deadshot!
Deadshot, Will Smith, Suicide Squad.
We were counting Suicide, of course.
Yeah.
It's on me.
Oh, my gosh. You said it faster because my dumb tongue is too tired.
Don't tell us why. I beg you, do not tell us why.
Yeah.
All right, Alonzo, you're up next.
Okay.
Women, nothing surprises me, Chip, except your late mother. Who'd have thought Selena had a brain to damage?
That would be Max Schreck in Batman Returns, played by Christopher Walken.
Wow. So
we're I knew that one.
I knew the actor. I totally forgot Max Schreck.
I knew Max Schreck because it's the Nosferatu reference.
Yes.
Ah. Okay, I'm next. Hopefully it's not that.
The Iceman cometh.
Yes! Mr. Freeze from... Oh, this is where... played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is where it's going to get dicey because this is in an era where they all mesh together. But I'm going to say... Batman Forever.
Batman and Robin.
It was those two. Those two movies are like literally the same for me. And I was trying to remember the McDonald's cups. Well, it's okay. Back on you, Dre.
All right. Can't wait for another one I won't get.
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound of it.
Oh my God. Jack Nicholson as the Joker. In Batman. I had one, I was like, honestly, I did a Matt Reeves. I was like, it's not the Batman. It was never the Batman. Okay.
The next one is the Batman, actually.
I know, that's why I was like, the Matt Reeves one. The non-Matt Reeves,
All right, now it's time for Alonzo to step up to the plate and see who's great.
At this point, they can't stop us. But the Batman has a talent for disruption. Pours him outside, the police will take him down.
Is it the Scarecrow, played by Kieran Murphy in Batman Begins?
Killian
Murphy. That's it.
All right, you are correct. Ooh. And now it's my turn.
On the other hand, youth does have its advantages. Endurance, stamina. Forget the geriatric bat. Come join me. My garden needs tending.
Okay. Whew. Luckily, there are context clues because the voice was blending and I was going to say something totally wrong. But that was Poison Ivy, played by Uma Thurman. And God, like I said, these two movies are melded. But I'm going to go Batman Forever.
Wrong.
Batman and Robin.
That's why, because I was like, I already
said
that.
He's in the same one with Mr. Freeze.
Well, because they mush it, because then you have the one, is the Riddler?
Save it.
Yeah, yes. Okay. We can't give it away early. So y'all both got a point for cleaning up my mess there when I got these same, they were in the same, I was trying so hard to remember if they're in the same one they are,
it's
because
fair.
She makes, Robin falls in love with her, and then they start fighting, and that was like right after they dealt with Mr. Freeze. Much too little, too late. Dre, it's your turn.
Hit me.
I believe the word you're looking for is...
That's Danny DeVito as the Penguin in Batman Returns. Nice. Oscar Cobblepot is his original name.
Oswald.
Yeah. Oswald. But is it Cobblepot? Okay.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Great job.
All right.
I'm not jealous at all, but we are moving on to Alonzo now.
Oh, you think darkness is your ally? You merely adopted the dark. I was born in it.
Yeah, that would be Tom Hardy as Bane. in The Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight?
The Dark Knight. No?
Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, shit. Ugh. He yeah. got there.
Yeah, we all got there. Eventually.
I was too busy chuckling over your perfect Tom Hardy.
We have to leave this plane with no survivors. We never talk about that switch in voice for that scene, but I never forgot it. It's my turn now.
What do we have here? Oh. You left me in a black hole of rage and confusion. I wouldn't want you to break those. Perfect porcelain cap teeth.
Wow. 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 Okay. Is this the Riddler? Is this? I'm trying.
Is it Heath Ledger as the Joker in The Dark Knight?
Is it Cesar Romero? It's from the TV show, right?
It's not from the 60s TV show.
Oh, okay.
Tell us.
All right. The answer is Joker by Jared Leto in Suicide Squad.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh. Yeah, I did not see it, and I'm fine with that. I guess it's your turn, Drea. No points for anyone.
When we open that safe, we'll have everything we ever wanted. Enough cash to rain down upon fair Gotham. A glorious flood of chaos.
Okay, that's... He looks like my dad. He's playing Two-Faced. It's Tommy Lee Jones.
Ooh.
And it's Batman Returns?
Batman Forever.
Damn it. Yeah, you're right.
The one time I was going to say it and it was right. My lips are too slow. They are also tired. Alonzo.
Again, don't want to know.
Nope. Move it along. Go to Alonzo.
Thought of busting Batman makes me feel all dirty.
Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman in Batman Returns.
That awakened something within young age.
All right.
Very few people are both a summer and a winter, but you pull it off nicely.
Yep, so Jim Carrey as the Riddler. And here we fucking go again. Okay. Was he working? Because now I have to remember, was he working with Two-Face or was he working with Mr. Freeze? I'm going to say Batman Forever.
Say it enough times.
Yeah. I was like, at this point, I can't jump off the ship. End of the game.
That was a roller coaster.
The low-key best part of that was none of us knew Jared Leto.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we did.
Burn Jared Leto.
Oh, man. I mean, like, listening to his performance is like, wow, you just kind of did. Like, his voice seemed, I was more thinking that was Jim Carrey than Joker.
Mm. What are the points?
Yeah.
All right. Third place, Iffy, with 7 points.
Figured that out.
In second place, Drea with 10 points.
All right, I'll take it.
10 points. And Alonzo, the big winner.
Of course.
With 14 points.
Just putting us to shame.
Suck it, internet people who think I don't know about comic movies.
Yeah, now it's proven, and we will continue to hug as we normally do. I guess it's time for our staff picks. It could be any movie in theaters, streaming, what have you. Why don't you start us off, Alonzo?
Well, this movie we referred to quickly last week, but I had not seen it yet, but now I have, and so my pick this week is Dolomite Is My Name.
Ooh, so it is good.
It is a delight. Screening theatrically for a couple of weeks, and then it's going to be coming out on Netflix. Eddie Murphy plays Rudy Ray Moore, and this is a film written by, speaking of Tim Burton, the writers of Ed Wood and Big Eyes, Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski. It is very much in keeping with their aesthetic of, you know, oddball showbiz outsiders make it big, you know, with a crazy idea that no one thinks is going to work. He basically, you know, Moore develops this comedy act based on these sort of like kind of old tall tale urban legends that he hears from like the old drunks on the street, and creates this Dolomite character who's this badass pimp, and you know, starts selling albums out of the back of his car, then gets a label deal, and then decides he's going to make a Dolomite movie. movie and nobody wants to do it. So he puts all of his own money into it and gets all these people together, even though they don't know what they're doing half the time. They have these UCLA film students, so the only ones who know like how the camera works and where to put a light. But it's just this wonderful sort of story about perseverance and, you know, getting your shit done. And Eddie Murphy is so wonderful. And like, it's been a full decade since Dreamgirls, and this is the first time since then where you're like, oh yeah, Eddie Murphy, you are amazing, and watching you is amazing. And you know, I've had my beef with his content in the past, but in this movie he is just a joy to watch. A great ensemble cast again, from Divine Joy Randolph, who's currently on Becoming a God in Central Florida, Titus Burris and Craig Robinson, and Wesley Snipes is hilarious. Ugh. As like the one sort of quote unquote legit Hollywood guy they get involved with this movie, who's directing it with his just like agog at how terrible it is. It's so charming and funny. It is, as somebody pointed out, the sweetest movie you will ever see where the word motherfucker is said 375 times.
That's great.
Yeah, Dolomite Is My Name. If it's playing near you, go see it. If not, it will be on Netflix real soon.
Oh, that was going to be the one question I was going to ask. Should I wait for Netflix or go see it in the...
I mean, you know, if you, I always say if you can see it in a theater, you should. I mean, it's not like, I'll say The Irishman, if you get to see that in a theater, see it in a theater. But this one, you know, it'll be fine on Netflix. It'd be fun to go see. I wish I had time to go see it this week at the New Beverly. They're showing it on 35mm in double features with actual Rudy Ray Moore movies.
Oh, cool.
Which I bet would just be a trip.
Oh, I hope that's not sold out, because that's what I'm going to buy once we get done. Drea, how about you? How about your pick? What's your...
All right, so I have a pick that we premiered at the last LA Film Festival, and it is a good, if you are one of the people sort of working your way through thrillers and horrors in October, it is called The Dead Center, and it stars Shane Carruth, whom a lot of people know as an actor and also a director. He did films like Upstream Color and Primer, and this fits snugly into his sensibilities, even though it's directed by Billy Sinisa. And it is, Shane Carruth plays a psychiatrist who, of course, has troubles of his own. You guys know how these things go. And he is treating this amnesiac patient who is convinced that he was brought back from the dead. So it is like a very low-key, psychological, atmospheric, maybe zombie-ish movie. Yeah, it's very... So if you have a palate for any of the kind of Upstream Color-esque films, The Dead Center. And it is currently, it's out in like a few markets like LA and New York and whatever, and but also available on VOD.
And I think the Blu-ray is coming out, if not on already,
the,
then
real soon.
At the
end of the month, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, and for me, you know, once again, I also want to keep it spooky for October. I just recently rewatched this because we talked about it on the Bechdelcast, it's a movie podcast, just going over film, seeing if they pass about the Bechdel test and talking about women in film, you know, that good stuff.
We have had the hosts of the Bechdelcast here on the show. They are wonderful folks.
Oh, was it before the fall when I joined?
I wasn't there either.
There was hope in the air. We believed in things.
It was less horny. But the Addams Family, which surprisingly holds up really well, like just both, you know, just the story and everything, and just, you know, comedies of that era, you know, can tend to be like oof, but like, no, it's still great. And it also reminds me that Raul Julia has done other movies besides Street Fighter.
Oh my god. Bless you, Iphigenia.
Well, it's funny because it always sticks out to me, because I don't know if you remember at the end of Street Fighter, it's a dedication to Raul Julia because that was his last film.
Girl, I love you think that I saw Street Fighter.
Well, you should. It was just Tuesday for me. His role as M. Bison, which I actually kind of like. The rest of the movie falls apart.
I gave you your Judy Garland list. Next comes the role.
I'm ready, because him as Gomez Adams is great. Now it's time for 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air. This one is from Bunty Goods. Thanks to this podcast, I've added some much-needed nutrition and vitamins to my movie junk food diet. They've got me seeking out and thinking about art and film in a way I haven't in years. Because of their great recommendations, I was able to catch the excellent documentary Maiden at my local second-run theater, Riverview Theater in Minneapolis. Shout out to Drea.
Minneapolis!
Thanks. I love these nerds. Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. These, for Maiden and Minneapolis.
These nerds love you, Bunty Goons.
Yes, truly. Well, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYourPod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.